Senate Committee on Human Services and Rural Health Policy has come to order. And welcome to all you early risers. Sorry we don't have coffee and donuts for you or any other stimulants. Anyway, we are going to deviate slightly from our schedule today. We're going to have a... Okay, we're going to hear Senate Bill. We're going to open a work session on Senate Bill 162. So would you give us an update, please?
Mr. Chairman, this bill was originally heard on January 28th. Senate Bill 162 amends the statute to prohibit Department of Human Services and Area Agency on Aging from disclosing resident confidential or protected information in abuse and neglect reports. We were awaiting the fiscal impact statement on the 28th, and we've received that now, and so there are no revenue or fiscal impacts on this bill.
So I would entertain a motion to move this bill.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I move Senate Bill 162 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. Senator Montes Anderson moves 162 to the floor with a due pass recommendation to the Senate floor. Discussion? Seeing no discussion, would the clerk call the roll, please?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Yes. Senator Cruz is excused. Okay. I will carry the bill. Okay. Close the public hearing and close the work session and open the public hearing on Senate Bill 158. Dr. Higginson, would you come up, please?
Good morning, Chair Morissette and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Dr. Grant Higginson, and I'm the administrator of the Office for Community Health and Health Planning, Public Health Division, Department of Human Services, and I'm here today in support of Senate Bill 150H, which is a governor's pre-session filed bill that was done so at the request of the Department's Health Care Licensing and Certification Program, and that program is within my office. I think that we would all agree that protecting the safety of people in Oregon is one of the critical functions of state government, and I think that very rightfully so that the legislature has entrusted that to the public health agency when it comes to ensuring the health and safety of health facilities and health agencies that provide services in the home. Unfortunately, our belief is that current oversight is inadequate in this area and that there needs to be work done. And the bill that you see before you is actually the start of that work. It involves a number of agencies, organizations, and providers. It is a relatively big bill, and we've been working with a number of stakeholders to try to get it to a place where we can all agree that this is the best state policy. So what we're bringing forward to you today and what you see in front of you is not what I believe the final bill needs to be. We're going to talk about what the general gist of the bill is, but then I'm going to ask for additional time and have something brought back to you in a more final version within the next few weeks. So the bill, as I see it, really does six things. The first thing is that it sets for the basic standard that the state would ensure an on-site inspection of all healthcare facilities, licensed healthcare facilities, and agencies that are providing services in the home at every 3 years intervals. And that was selected because that's really the industry standard that's been set by the Joint Commission for the Accreditation of Healthcare Organizations, and we believe it is an appropriate one. Right now, we have some facilities that are meeting that standard, but we have others that don't get surveyed except for every 7 to 10 years, and we just don't think that is adequate. The second issue is that we are providing a clearer definition for ambulatory surgical centers. At the current time, the definition is one that goes something like a facility that provides surgeries not routinely performed in a doctor's office and can meet physical plant requirements, and we think that that is too vague. And so what we are proposing in the bill is really to match the ambulatory surgical center definitions and guidelines to what is required of ambulatory surgical centers by the Center for Medicaid and Medicare Services, CMS, at the federal government. And not only would this make us then consistent with our federal partners, another thing it does is brings some facilities under regulation that currently aren't under regulation. ASCs, ambulatory surgical centers, that receive money from CMS must be certified and therefore must be licensed by the state. But those facilities that could be providing exactly the same surgical procedures but are not receiving CMS dollars do not have to be licensed by the state, and we believe that all of those facilities should be. So that would bring those facilities under regulatory oversight as well. The third thing it does, and this is again bringing providers under regulatory oversight, is that at the current time, we are responsible for licensing home health agencies that provide primarily nursing services in the home, and we're also responsible for licensing in-home care agencies that are providing personal health-related services in the home. However, we do not have any authority over referral agencies that are providing nursing services in the home, and we have no authority over infusion services who are supporting intravenous therapies in the home. And we think, again, that these are two agencies that should be provided under regulatory oversight. So all of the three things that I've described to you so far would require additional resources. And to begin with, the healthcare licensing certification program is currently under-resourced. Since 1994, we have received no general funds, and in the past we had. We have, over the past several years, seen either level funding or decreased funding from the federal government, from the CMS agency, and the most recent fee increase that we've had in the program was 12 years ago, but most of the fees have been 15 years are 15 years old or older. And so we've seen decreasing resources over the past decade and a half. We've cut our staff from 16 individuals to 11 individuals, but at the same time, we've seen increasing demands, and I have some numbers in here. The number of surveys, inspections have increased from 80 to 352, the number of complaint investigations of 35 to 130, and just the number of licensed facilities in itself has increased from 367 to 568. So we have decreasing resources, we have increasing needs for activities, and we simply need additional resources. And as I think we've been directed by the legislature for the last several sessions, we've been working with the industry to come up with an increased fee schedule that we hope everyone will be able to support, and that is one of the issues that we still need to do some work on.
What's the current fee schedule?
Chair Morris said I would have to get that to you, and you know, it varies by facility. But when we come back the next time, we will have it definitely broken down and a good description of how we got to the numbers that we got to.
Well, generally, are they under $100 a year, over $100, or is there what?
Chair Morris said
they haven't been increased for 12 years, so.
Right. Chair Morris said they're. In the hundreds to thousands of dollars.
Hundreds to thousands
right,
of
right,
dollars.
For ambulatory surgical centers, for instance, right now are $1,000.
Okay.
And the proposal is that larger ambulatory surgical centers would go up to $1,750, smaller ones to $1,250.
Okay, but there are some.
The whole schedule for hospitals we're suggesting be changed. Instead of a facility and size of facility fee, it would be actually based on the number of beds, which is done by another. A number of states.
Okay.
But as I said, Chair Morris, that we will bring back a very detailed fee schedule when we come back to you the next time.
Thank you.
The fifth thing that the bill does is a couple of things that I see as really providing more transparency for patients and insurers and to help them make better healthcare decisions. So one thing it does is requires that if there is a financial interest of over 5% of the person that is performing a procedure in a facility, that financial interest be disclosed to the patient. And the other thing is that for informed consent process, when a procedure is being done in the facility where there is a possibility that the patient would have to be transferred elsewhere, that the facility would instruct the patient that if a complication arises that they can't handle, this is the procedure that would be followed and where you would be going.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Yeah, thank you. Why 5%? Is there something magic about that?
Chair Morissette and Senator Cruz, the reason that number was chosen was that is the number that CMS uses, okay, Center for Medicaid Services in defining.
Okay. I did see the fee schedule in Section 16. I had looked through this, but I just overlooked that part.
Great. And Chair Morissette, I would say that one of the issues that has been raised is a question from some of our partners on, are those appropriate fees?
Yeah.
Our intent here is not to subsidize any facility or agency with fees that are being collected from another facility or agency. What we're really trying to do is make sure that the fees that are collected from ASCs really go to serve ambulatory surgical centers. The fees that are collected for hospitals go to serving hospitals, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And then the sixth and final thing is that Senate Bill 158 provides a new civil penalty authority over all of these facilities and agencies. And right now we have limited civil penalty authority, and we just think that this is an important part of our toolbox, that we very, very rarely do assess a civil penalty, but we think it's important for us to have that ability. And just for example, with a hospital, if we find a deficiency, basically it's we tell them you have to correct the deficiency, and we keep checking to make sure they do, or we say we pull your license, and we think that there needs to be something in between where we have some authority to stimulate appropriate action. As I mentioned, this is a fairly big bill, and we came up with this language and then shared it with a number of stakeholders, and that includes the Oregon Hospital Association, the Ambulatory Surgical Center Association, the Oregon Medical Association, and the association that works with both in-home care agencies and home health agencies. So we've been working with that group of stakeholders. We've come up with some proposed amendment language, which we have gotten out to people and gotten good responses. They say we think we're moving in the right direction, but we're still not exactly there yet, where everyone can come to agreement and support this bill. And so what we're asking of the committee today is for you to tell us to go back and over the next couple weeks figure out the fee structure that is most appropriate to tweak the bill to make sure that we have language that everyone can come to agreement on, and then bring that back to you. And with that, I'll close, and thank you for the opportunity for providing testimony. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions?
Yeah.
Senator Telfer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maureen Grant. I'm generally a little uneasy about overreaching regulatory authority unless there really is a need, particularly when it adds cost to the business, and in this case it does. It's adding cost to the medical industry also. So with your third point, increasing that regulatory oversight, they're currently unlicensed because they're not getting Medicare services. What's the incident? I mean, what's the reason to expand the regulatory authority over them?
Chair Morissette and Senator Telfer, I wish that I was able to give you more specific research data on, this is what happens when you don't regulate, this is when you do, but I can give you some anecdotal information. renal dialysis facilities used to be unregulated. About 10 or so years ago, we had some major problems where a number of people were sick enough to be hospitalized because of inappropriate dialysis. And so we worked with the industry then to get them under regulation. And since that time, we have not had any of those similar kind of problems. You may recall that over the summertime in the state of Nevada, where they have voluntary licensure of ambulatory surgical centers, there was a hepatitis C outbreak that was due to inappropriate or inadequate infection disease control at those ambulatory surgical centers. There's been work that's been done by the Joint Commission on Accreditation of Hospitals that shows that those facilities that are reviewed every 3 years do have better safety, patient safety outcomes than those that aren't. So in general, there is information out there, both anecdotal and some research, that says industries should be regulated if we are going to expect good outcome. I cannot tell you that specifically for infusion or for home nursing service referral agencies, but I think in general, our feeling is that there needs to be some oversight when anyone is providing a healthcare service in a facility or in a home, particularly to vulnerable patients, and that an every 3 year standard to us seems like the industry standard right now for most facilities, and one that we think should be adopted across the board. And the other thing I would like to mention too is that what we don't want to do is duplicate any inspection services. So currently for hospitals, we allow what's called deemed status. So if they have the Joint Commission on the Accreditation of Healthcare Organizations come out and do an inspection once every 3 years, and that passes, we've already said yes, that meets the requirements that the state has for an inspection, and so we just accept that inspection instead of doing one ourselves. And we are extending that same kind of deeming status to all of the different agencies, so that if they want to use another accrediting organization that we believe does meet the standards for the state of Oregon, then that's fine for them to do that instead of having a state survey.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator
Bonner. I've had the opportunity to visit several ambulatory surgical centers and have been very much impressed with the systems that they have implemented in providing care. I do believe there needs to be oversight, but I want to put on record that my committee, anyway, will be hopefully maybe in June, after we get through this rush, visit the ambulatory surgical center right down the street here. They are top-notch. Many of them are. I can't say all of them are. And what they provide and the systems that they have implemented, actually their infection rates, et cetera, are even less than what hospitals are. And I'm so glad that so many of them are participating on the Patient Safety Commission, so that because I think some of the procedures that they have implemented, the whole healthcare industry can learn from it.
No, Chair Morissette and Senator Mona Sanderson, I agree that ASC's ambulatory surgical centers do fill a real niche, and have been very happy with the participation in the association and their representatives in the work that we're trying to do here.
Senator Virgin.
Yes, you say that these providers are currently unlicensed by the state. That's in your concerning this oversight about people that are in the home providing care and infusion.
Chair Morissette, Senator Virgin. Right now, we license in home care agencies, and those agencies are ones that aren't necessarily providing nursing services, but are sending individuals in the home to help people with personal care services, oftentimes because of health-related conditions that individual has. We also have licensing responsibility for home health agencies, which in general are providing higher level nursing care services to individuals in the home where they need it, because they don't need to be hospitalized, but they need some kind of ongoing care in the home. So those two agencies we currently license. What we don't license are those referral staffing agencies that are putting nurses into the home, sometimes on a 24/7, 7 days a week basis, that are not part of a home health agency. Those are individuals, those are agencies that we have no current licensing authority for. And then the other group are the infusion providers, and these are providers who are helping people at home with intravenous therapy, which sometimes can be very, complicated and at times risky procedures. We have no licensing authority over those agencies as well. Now, all of the providers, if you're a nurse or if you're a pharmacist or if you're a doctor, then you already are covered by those licensing boards. But as an agency, those two agencies, the referral agencies and the infusion agencies, are currently not covered.
Well, I guess the follow-up, Mr. Chair,
yes.
I guess my comment would be, having just been fairly recently through a very long-term terminal illness, I did not think to ask people who came into my home to provide services whether they were licensed or not, and I think that is causing me some concern. Now, thankfully, we did most everything ourselves, but there was an occasion when people came in, and I'm not sure whether they fell into the group that you're talking about that's unlicensed, and I would have found that concerning at the time.
And Mr. Chair, just a follow-up to that remark, I don't know if it was last session, but we had one of our members who also had a loved one being cared for, and the care was very inadequate, and that's where all the ideas started flowing, that there are some agencies out there that are not licensed and are not providing good care. And having been someone who actually worked with seniors and putting Foley catheters into a person in their home, and some of these homes are, in order to get a sanitary, safe, clean procedure done in some of these homes is very difficult, and they do need to be trained, and there needs to be oversight because infection can happen so easily.
And Chair Morissette and Senator Sanderson, if I can follow up on that, because I was involved with that bill as well, and the thing that really hit me when we were going through that is that there were a number of people in the in-home care agencies that really are providing outstanding care, and the association that represents them is really trying to push that high-level care. Unfortunately, there are other agencies that really didn't take, safety precautions pretty seriously, and so it's not the industry that we're trying to blast or blame and saying, everyone's a bad player and we need to be on top of them all the time, but there are those players that do need some extra education, and they do need some sanctioning if they are providing inappropriate services, and that's what we're trying to do with this bill.
Okay. Thank you, Grant.
Thank you.
Gwen Dayton.
Thank you, Chairman. Members of the committee, for the record, I'm Gwen Dayton. I'm the Executive VP and General Counsel for the Oregon Association of Hospitals and Health Systems. I'll be brief because Dr. Hickinson said much of what I would like to say on behalf of hospitals, that we appreciate the process that the state is engaging in on this bill. It is a big bill. There's a lot in it. And there's work that needs to be done on this bill before the hospitals can tell you formally whether we support or oppose or what our position would be. But we are very committed to continuing to work with Dr. Higginson and his staff and the other stakeholders on this bill to make it the best bill it can be. And we're engaged in active conversation throughout the course of this week and next. I mean, this is not a bill that is stalled in anybody's point of view. We're very actively engaged in trying to work out some of the details. And I expect the next time this comes up, we'll be able to tell you what the hospital's formal position on the bill is. So that's largely what I wanted to say, and I'm also happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Just to bring up one of the things that we had talked about, and it has to do with the number of beds, and
right,
that hospitals have a number of off-site facilities, and could you just put on record where that if hospitals do have, how they have sort of ambulatory surgical centers in a sense.
Oh, I see, yes. Joe Morissette Center, Morris Anderson. Hospitals are, and they can be complex entities, especially when it comes to this bill, because we are hospitals, as all of you know, but we also sometimes own or co-own an ambulatory surgery center. So the regulation or the details in this bill relating to ASCs also, hospitals also have an interest in. We also have what are called satellite facilities, which can be facilities that serve the hospital that are under the hospital's license, but they might be off the campus of the hospital. Those are subject now to additional licensure fee. And we're working with the state on how to make that satellite fee equitable in light of the size of the underlying hospital. I think one of the issues that we discussed was sometimes a small rural hospital could have a satellite facility that might, under the current structure in the bill, be assessed a fee at the same level as the hospital itself, which I think is probably not what anybody really intends. And I'm very grateful to be able to have the conversation with the state that this doesn't seem quite right, and I think we'll be able to fix those sorts of things. But I appreciate the question, because those are the kind of conversations that are being had, and we're grateful for the commitment of everyone to come together and try to make this right. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Lynn Stapes.
Chairman Morissette and members of the committee, my name is Lynn Stapes. I am the administrator at McKinsey Surgery Center in Eugene, Oregon, and I'm also the president of the Oregon Ambulatory Surgery Association. Thank you for allowing me to come and testify today on behalf of OASCA, Ambulatory Surgery Association. I'm here to offer conditional support of Senate Bill 158. Our conditional support is because of outstanding resolution of a few key issues. First of all, I'd like to thank the staff of the Department of Human Services and Dr. Grant Higginson, his staff, and all the stakeholders that have been involved in our meetings, their openness and willingness to hear our concerns. One critical piece we are requesting is for the legislation to utilize the same definitions and guidelines for the ambulatory surgery centers that are used for by the Center of Medicare and Medicaid on the federal level. We think that consistency is important. Thank you for considering upcoming amendments for this bill. Surgery centers are an innovative, safe way to deliver health care, and we are an integral part of Oregon's health care delivery system. As Senator Amanis Anderson had mentioned, we welcome all of you to visit an ASC and see firsthand the services that we're providing to Oregonians. Thank you.
Are you concerned about the fee increases, the amounts of the various licenses?
I believe, after discussing with our members, that they're reasonable.
Okay.
They haven't been changed in many years. We are always concerned about increasing fees because of the increasing fees we had for the Patient Safety Commission and on and other fees that are being placed on us. But at this point, the group believes that it's reasonable.
And increased regulations?
Well, that's where some of our concerns are, and we're in active discussion with Dr. Higginson about them, and we think that we can work through that.
Okay.
And the one that I mentioned was the definition for an ASC, and we're asking and discussing with them about utilizing what the federal government has already defined an ASC as being.
Okay. Good. And thank you.
Thank you.
Others wishing to testify? Okay. Seeing no others wishing to testify, we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 158, and we will open a public hearing on 163. No, did we do 163?
That's what we're doing.
Yeah, we're doing 163. Okay, mm-hmm. We did 162. Open a public hearing on 163. Mary Gear.
Good evening.
Mr. Chair, Senate Bill 163 provides Department of Human Services the right to go directly to a contested case hearing for a nursing assistant disputing a finding of abuse of a resident in long-term care. Additionally, the proposal would remove the informal conference requirement, and it requires the Oregon State Board of Nursing to maintain nursing assistant registry that contains information required by federal law, including a finding of abuse.
Okay. Welcome, Mary.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Chair Morissette and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Mary Deer. I'm the administrator for the Office of Licensing and Quality of Care in Seniors and People with Disabilities, Oregon Department of Human Services. I'm here this morning to testify in support of Senate Bill 163, which was introduced at the request of the governor on behalf of the Department of Human Services. This bill really seeks to remedy a discrepancy between federal and state regulations. Current federal regulations say that a certified nurse assistant who has a finding of substantiated abuse against him or her has a right to a hearing. Current statute allows an administrative review for certified nurse assistants who have a finding of substantiated abuse. And our conversations with the Department of Justice have resulted in really a finding that a contested case hearing was the intent of the federal regulation. And so in 2008, we implemented a process of doing both an administrative review in order to be in compliance with state statute, and also gave certified nurse assistants the right to a contested case hearing at the same time. What this bill is doing is removing the administrative review and allowing nurse aides in that situation to go directly to a contested case hearing. We have, in my written testimony, we've requested a couple of amendments. Those amendments really seek to make clear that the authority for the abuse registry for certified nurse assistants lies with the Department of Human Services. Currently, the department contracts with the Board of Nursing. That's an arrangement that goes very well. We have no intention of changing that. However, in looking at the statutory language, our request was to remove the Board of Nursing in statute as the entity that maintains the certified nurse aid abuse registry. So the federal regulation requires the registry. The Department of Human Services receives federal funding to maintain the registry. And as I say, currently we contract with the Board of Nursing for that. What we'd like as a department is the authority to be able to come up with a different arrangement if it was not working or a federal regulation changed or something like that. And so we would simply remove references to the Board of Nursing having control of the registry and leave that with the Department of Human Services. I have discussed this issue with the Board of Nursing, and they're certainly have no concerns or questions about removing that particular language. So I thank you for the opportunity to testify, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Have there been anecdotal problems with the way it is now?
Chair Morissette and Senator Mona Anderson, we have very few certified nurse aides who actually request a contested case hearing, quite frankly. So in the last year that we've been offering both an administrative review and a contested case hearing, we've had, I believe it's three certified nurse assistants who have gone on to a contested case hearing, meaning indicating perhaps that they were not happy with the outcome of the administrative review. So we don't expect this to be a huge workload, and either for us or for our administrative law judges at all.
I'm thinking of a case in my district where the director of assisted living, I'm not sure if it's assisted living, called me very concerned that one of their CNAs who were being brought before the board, but I may be confusing this with an RN, so I apologize. And the staff felt that she was just a wonderful provider, and it would just happen to be a circumstance with one patient that something happened, and I cannot
So is this going to alleviate problems where maybe the dynamics between a patient and a CNA just didn't jive? Or is this not addressing that type of issue?
Chair Morissette and Senator Mona Sanderson, if it were to address this issue at all, it would be very indirectly, is how I would answer that. What it does is it gives the certified nurse assistant a venue to say either yes, this happened, or no, it didn't, but I don't think that you should put me on the abuse registry, which means that I can't work in the long-term care industry anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And really the issue is when there's a finding like this and a certified nurse assistant's name goes on the registry, it does take away their livelihood. Mm-hmm. And so having a review at a higher level really speaks to the seriousness of that kind of a finding and gives due process to that certified nurse assistant.
Thank you.
We were deeply involved in the Board of Nursing over the last couple of years, and there were some problems that I think have been corrected, and I think this is part of that process. I hope.
Senator Morissette, Chair Morissette, we appreciate the amount of work that the Board of Nursing has put into changing their practices and creating a very professional board. And we have also worked with them in the various places where we overlap, which is quite considerable, and this is one of them. So as I say, we don't have any plans to change our relationship. It is working well, and we're happy with that contract. We simply want the opportunity to be able to without having to change statute.
Yeah, good. Yeah, Senator Bridger.
How much of a problem is this? I'm just a little perturbed that there would be a person that would be truly abusive. I'm more prone to think that, as Senator Mona Sanderson referred to, that people sometimes have a conflict, and also a patient sometimes can be very difficult. And so I think they're all degrees of abuse. However, I will tell you that I get a fair amount of complaints through emails, not so much about nursing, but just simply about care. And so do you feel that this is a big problem with the CNAs, or is it just an isolated problem and you want to be sure that they have a fair shake when it comes to it?
Chair Morissette and Senator Verger, if I could just clarify, I heard a couple of questions in there. One is abuse a problem? And yes, it is, which is why we have our system. The other is it often that a certified nurse assistant will dispute what's happened? And the answer to that question is no. If I might back up a minute and just talk about our investigatory process in nursing facilities where most certified nurse assistants work in long-term care. The state statute requires that when there's a finding of abuse, that we allocate fault or blame, if you will, percentage-wise between the facility and an individual. And so it's possible in a finding of abuse that it was the facility's systems really that contributed to the situation, and that it may or may not have been any action on the part of that individual that caused the abuse. In other situations, all the facility systems and practices were fine. It was the actions of a particular individual that were abusive toward a resident. And so that's part of the discernment that an investigator has to make when they're looking at a particular allegation. And those allegations are varied, as you indicate. And there are times when there really isn't evidence that something's happened. There are times when it's evidence that there's a personality conflict. And there are times when there has been abuse that's been committed. And it's really those situations where a certified nurse aide would be placed on the registry, and we want to give them due process so that it's not done capriciously.
Mr. Chair, yes. Follow up, please. I want to make it clear. Most of the criticism or complaints that I get from residents in my district have to do with facility process, in other words, and not with individual abuse of a patient. So I'm glad you mentioned that, because I needed to clarify that for you.
Okay. Thank you very much. I would like to invite the director of the Board of Nursing to come when we hear this bill again, because I'd like to review their new policies. There were some problems 2 years ago, definitely.
We have a new administrator.
Yes. And it would be good to review their new procedures and policies and investigative structure, because that was a problem. There were cases that were not investigated, and the AG's office was at various levels of the AG's office up to the assistant AG was very much involved, as was the reporter from the Tribune, as we remember.
Yes.
And I think that there, you know, we have a new director, a new system, and it would be well to review that, and we would talk about, I'm concerned about investigation and backlog and whether or not, you know, things are going well. It's been 2 years, and I think it would be a good idea to...
Chair Morissette, if I may just clarify, the investigations of abuse in nursing facilities that involve certified nurse assistants are done by the Seniors and People with Disabilities Division, not the Board of Nursing.
Well, but this is, if the Board of Nurses is involved, it would
absolutely
be, and the questions are varied, you know, so it would be a good opportunity to just give a quick overview of where they are.
Absolutely.
Okay. Yes.
Thank you.
Senator Telford.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question. Another concern I have is many times when a government body outsources a service, it can be cheaper. And in these days of really having to work with our budgets, I'd like to know, by bringing the registry function back into the agency and away from the contractor Board of Nurses right now, I would hate to see the bureaucracy enlarged. I'd like to see, or have you tell me, and you may not know, but what's the cost benefit here by bringing it in-house? Is this going to create more cost at the state level versus contracting out?
Chair Morissette and Senator Telfer, if I might just reiterate, we don't have plans to bring it in-house now, and are very happy with how the Board of Nursing is working. What we're asking is that if in the future either the federal regulations change such that that arrangement doesn't work anymore, or there are concerns with the Board of Nursing, again, that have, you know, that are not being resolved in a way that's acceptable to the department, that we would have the opportunity to bring it in-house. Having said that, the advantage of having the Board of Nursing be responsible for the registry is that they're the entity that certify the nurse aides. And so they already have some administrative functions around that. So it's very easy for us to do the investigations, to go through the hearing process, and simply ask them to either flag a nurse aide on the registry or not. I'd be happy to give you a breakdown of the cost of that, and would say simply that most of the cost of that is federal funds that flows through the Department of Human Services to the Board of Nursing.
Paul, question?
Yes.
That being it, I thought there was an amendment. So all you're doing is wanting to put in this bill verbiage that allows you at whenever you want to take the registry back into the agency.
Chair Morris,
kind of an open-ended, you don't have to come back to us to establish justification for doing that. You can just do it when you want to do it.
Chair Morissette and Senator Telfer, right now the language in the statute as it's written says things like the registry as maintained by the Board of Nursing, which indicates that the Board of Nursing has to keep the registry. So what we've proposed in the amendments is simply to take out that language about the Board of Nursing and simply say the registry is maintained. So it doesn't specify by who, And so if we elect to continue to use the Board of Nursing, that's fine. If we bring it in-house, that's fine. If we choose to contract with another entity, that would be fine without having to come back and ask for a statute change in order to make that decision.
Yesterday, in Senator Monta Sanderson's committee, at the very end of the hearing, we had this discussion about the state having to take over functions, slightly different situation in the counties. If the counties drop particular functions that the state is obligated, and I think the feeling was that the state does not want to do that. We don't want the state to. We want, you know, to allow other entities to do some of that work. The only problem is we don't pay them enough sometimes. And so there's a tendency to give them back. But I understand what you're saying, and I don't see this as a power grab in any way by the state. I think that the idea is that you have other agencies that you contract with or allow to do it or set up statutorily to do the investigation and so on and so forth. But if there's a power failure in there somewhere, then the state has to step in. And it was a very messy situation 2 years ago that was finally resolved. And we'll hear a little bit about that when we come back. And we're here to do the oversight, and so we ask those kinds of questions, and even if we suspect that they're doing a wonderful job, we always have to ask that question. So I think that's the way we operate. Thank you very much, Mary.
Thank you.
Okay. Others wishing to testify? Seeing no others wishing to testify, we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 163, and we will adjourn. How about that?
That's awesome.
Good job. Is that a record?